Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know?
Oh, yeah. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the magnificent, glorious, and gorgeous Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Soulotopia song. We're back for another great hour here. We're basically riding the wave of demise of, that's, I guess, a great term. I like that one. Kevin Camps, you with us?
I am.
Good. Carl Grossman, you on yet? Okay, we're waiting for Carl Grossman. Kevin, we'll roll with you for a while until Carl checks in. But you're going to be with us for the full hour anyway. Wave of demise, I kind of just coined that. Kind of like Donald Trump priming the pump. You know, one of those great new phrases that we come up with from time to time. So I just read, Kevin Camps, describe yourself before we roll on here. My distinguished guests are so distinguished, including you, I hesitate to introduce. So give us your creds here.
You're too kind, Harvey. Well, my name is Kevin Camps, and I work at Beyond Nuclear, and my title is Radioactive Waste Watchdog. And I also serve as a board member for Don't Waste Michigan, where I'm from. So I do a lot of work on reactors and radioactive waste in the Great Lakes, but I work on radioactive waste nationally, too.
And you've been doing it for how long?
25 years.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. You don't even look 25.
A half-life. More than a half-life.
Of what? A half-life of what?
Anyway. My half-life. Half of my life.
Nah, you'll go to 110 at least. I like to say, you know, I'm 71. I like to say my life is half over, you know. Anyway, I just read online an article from Bloomberg of all places. Let's set the stage here. We're going to focus primarily on the 99 remaining atomic reactors in the United States and the four that is still, you know, hanging on by a fingernail being constructed in the southeast. So we want to cover the terrain here, the overview of what's happening with nuclear power in the United States. And I want to start, there have been two big bailouts voted for old reactors to stay online, to be subsidized to stay online. One of them is in New York, and that is actually going to court on June 5th. In a major, major confrontation over whether or not idiot governor of New York, Mario Cuomo's son, can bail out these four upstate reactors to the tune of $7.6 billion. But the bailout, to my understanding, in Illinois for three downstate reactors about almost $3 billion.
$2.35 billion.
But I just read that they failed. Quad Cities failed at auction to be competitive, even with the bailout. Do you know anything about that? It was just on Bloomberg.
Yeah, I saw that headline fly through. I didn't read the article. It is quite amazing. These bailouts were supposed to make everything better. But the thing that I often hasten to add is, you know, finances are important. Dollars and cents are hard earned, and some people are barely getting by, if that. So being surcharged a nuclear tax on your electric bill doesn't help vast numbers of people in New York State and Illinois. But in addition to all that dollars and cents stuff, there's the safety question. And these are very, very old reactors, the ones in upstate New York especially. Many of those are over 40 years old. And all that money they're getting from ratepayers, $7.6 billion in New York State, $2.35 billion in Illinois, not one penny of that money is required to do major safety upgrades that are vitally needed. I mean, granted, probably some of that money will be used for whatever maintenance they need to do to keep operating, but these major safety repairs of, you know, vital control systems, those are going to get deferred because they cost too much. And, you know, let's hope that our luck holds out and one of those safety systems doesn't break and cause a meltdown.
Well, it's astounding. I mean, are these just open-ended handouts? Are these guys can do anything they want with this money?
Yep, it's a wealth redistribution mechanism, and really a lot of that money is going into executive salaries, into worker paychecks, because they're paid quite well for what they do at the nuclear power plant sites, and also shareholder returns. So, you know, I'm most familiar with reactors, as I mentioned, in the Great Lakes, places like Davis-Bessey in Ohio, Palisades in Michigan. And the bailout that First Energy in Ohio has tried to get for many years at this point, in the billions of dollars as well, they wouldn't put one penny of that bailout towards the severely cracked and ever getting worse concrete containment at Davis-Bessey. So that's asking for a catastrophe. And up in Michigan, there's hints of one of these bait and switches, just like happened in New York, just like happened in Illinois, where the companies said, hey, we're going to shut these reactors down unless you bail us out. So they were using it as political leverage. All these workers are going to be out of work. All these tax revenues are going to dry up unless you give us these massive ratepayer bailouts. And they're hitting at that at Palisades. And at Palisades, you've got the most embrittled reactor pressure vessel in the country, maybe in the world. And if they get that bailout in Michigan, they're not going to put a penny towards that severe safety risk.
Well, how do we know that that reactor pressure vessel is embrittled? How are they able to test that now?
Yeah, well, Michael Keegan with Don't Waste Michigan and Coalition for Nuclear Free Great Lakes has been watchdogging that technical issue since 1993, if not earlier, because he wrote a white paper in 1993. We have the benefit of working with folks like Arnie Gunderson at Fairwinds Associates. He's a nuclear engineer. We have documented Palisades reactor pressure vessel embrittlement very extensively going back decades. We have a section on the Beyond Nuclear website, a chronology of embrittlement issues, mostly Palisades, but other pressurized water reactors as well. And I never counted the number of documents on that database, but it's in the hundreds. It goes back to the 1960s as an issue. We found out in our research on Palisades that the reason it's so embrittled is because the Atomic Energy Commission in 1970 or so allowed for them to build the thing without putting in a thermal shield. So it was kind of like a big experiment. Let's see how this goes. And a letter from the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards to the Atomic Energy Commission, written by two infamous individuals, Hendry, who would preside over the NRC during the Three Mile Island meltdown, was writing to the discoverer of plutonium, Seaborg, and he said, hey, look, this thermal shield costs money. We're not going to require it. If it gets embrittled, they can simply anneal it, and everything will be fine. Well, guess what? They have never annealed it. It costs too much. It's too complicated. We could always do it, but we're not going to do it. And we just sail ever deeper into uncharted territory of risk with the Palisades reactor pressure vessel. But there are others that have the same problem. Point Beach in Wisconsin. So Lake Michigan is between the two worst in the country. And then one of the units at Indian Point is badly embrittled. And so is one of the units at Diablo Canyon. So this is a pressurized water reactor problem. And it's just a question of which one's worst, which one's second worst. They've all got this problem.
Quite amazing. Has Carl Grossman called in yet? Okay, in the studio, you guys, I emailed you Carl's phone number. If you could give him a call, that'd be great. He might have misunderstood the time that we're talking. Kevin Camps is more than capable of handling a couple hours on these issues, but let's deal with it. You've raised an interesting question here. On the bailout language, the legal language of the bailouts in New York and in Illinois, and also what's written in Ohio, are there no requirements specifically for what's going to happen to this money?
I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. It's It's really just to keep these reactors, which are so uncompetitive. That's the remarkable thing. You mentioned the Bloomberg article that just came out. Despite all these advantages, despite decades of subsidies, all told, both taxpayer subsidies and ratepayer subsidies, and these bailouts now are just the latest round of this. But this goes back to the beginning, a half century ago, depending on how old the reactors are. Despite all those advantages, the reactors are still uncompetitive. Despite not making the needed safety repairs, they still can't compete. And all this money does is really keeps the financials above water, and just barely at that. But, you know, the CEOs of these companies are doing quite well, thank you very much. I mean, I'm most familiar with Entergy Nuclear, owner of Palisades in Michigan, Indian Point, Units 2 and 3 in New York, and other reactors, Pilgrim near Boston. And their typical take-home pay per year is like $20 million, $25 million at the CEO level, and then, you know, a little bit lower than that at the CFO and COO. So these nuclear executives are making out like bandits, and the shareholders are doing quite well. And like I mentioned, the workers at the plants get paid a very handsome take-home pay, and they're not asking any questions about any of that. But their lobbyists are quite busy in the state legislatures and the governor's mansions and in the halls of Congress and at the White House to make sure that that money flows their way to pay their big paychecks.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we're finding in Ohio. I went to the hearings last week in the Ohio legislature, and I got to say that the atmosphere in the Ohio legislature, of which I've never been a big fan, is very lukewarm to giving the bailout in Ohio. They're asking for $300 million a year for at least 15 years, and apparently more, which would be $4.5 or $5 billion. Carl, are you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
Okay, good. So I got Kevin Camps. We're discussing the fine print of the bailouts. I mean, it seems we're talking about three bailouts, basically. New York, $7.6 billion for the four reactors upstate. That's Fitzpatrick, Ginna, 9 Mile, and what is it, 9 Mile 1 and 2? Which one of those is a double reactor?
That's right.
Nine Mile Point. It's yeah. 1 and 2.
Okay. Okay, and they're all on Lake Ontario. Is that right? All four of
yes.
them?
Yep.
Okay.
That's right.
So here's the question that, Carl, and this would actually go us a long way. I think we have a very good chance of stopping this bailout in Ohio. There were some very interesting questions asked during the hearings. I had to leave. It's never happened to me before. I thought I was going to have time enough to testify, and it went on and on, and I had to catch a plane. And I can't remember in my life very many more frustrating moments than walking out of that hearing. But there were seven people in front of me, and there was just no way. And in fact, the woman I went with, Pat Morita from the Sierra Club, who was right behind me, didn't testify until my plane left. So at any rate, I don't think anybody, and like I said, I think we can win in Ohio, even the way it stands now, because they in 1999, the Ohio legislature voted $9 billion for the Perry and Davis Bessie nukes for deregulation. As you guys will remember, there was a wave of scams when they deregulated and said, well, these nukes, we want free competition, but they can't compete now because the public demanded we build these. So we got to have money to make them competitive. And in 1999, they got $9 billion for these two ridiculous reactors. And here they are back again, wanting more money. And a lot of the legislators are not keen on this. And I have to say that John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, who is a Republican, I think is going to oppose this, as opposed to our sterling Democrat, Andrew Cuomo, in New York. But here's the point that Kevin has raised. Nobody, to my knowledge, is reading the fine print on these bailouts. Where exactly in the $7.6 billion bailout in New York is this money supposed to go? Are there legal requirements on how this money will be spent? Do either of you guys know?
Why don't you go on that, Kevin?
Yeah, sure. I don't think there is any requirements as to how the money is spent. I think it's coming out of the Clean Energy Fund set up by the Cuomo administration. And what astounds me is that two-thirds of the Clean Energy Fund is going to get gobbled up by these four atomic reactors. So that's going to leave a third of the Clean Energy Fund for clean energy, you know? So I guess what it's all about, what the justification supposedly is these old reactors are doing such tremendous public service in terms of saving the climate that we have to reward them with this largesse when nothing could be further than the truth. I mean, if that $7.6 billion were to go into new renewables and efficiency, the climate protection dollar for dollar would be, you know, orders of magnitude bigger than wasting it on these old reactors.
But basically, these guys can just take the money and do whatever the hell they want with it. Is that right, Carl? You know anything about this?
I mean, I do. It's a very it's terrible. I mean, what Andrew Cuomo advanced this is last year was a 50-by-30 program, and it's not 100% renewable. But what he was talking about is New York State getting 50% of its electricity from renewable sources by the year 2030. Now, other areas, big city of San Francisco, and well, here on Long Island, East Hampton, the town of East Hampton, have committed themselves to 100% renewable, and essentially right away. In any case, Cuomo did advance this program 50%, and he's been very big, very strong on offshore wind. Which really could, between offshore wind and solar, it's solartopia. I mean, wind is a product, in fact, of solar, causing the winds to blow and so forth. But we could have solartopia in New York in terms of the positive side that Andrew Cuomo is advocating. Furthermore, Cuomo subsequently and Riverkeeper and other environmental groups put together a deal, to me, an utterly great deal. I mean, that could be better, far better, too. But still, in a few years, the shutdown of the Indian Point plants, Indian Point 2 and 3, which are just 26 miles north of the New York City line. And Cuomo said some important and correct things about those Indian Point plants. On an earthquake fault, the Ramapo Fault, they're in close proximity to, in fact, they're in the middle of a population center of America. Over 20 million people live within 50 miles of the Indian Point plants. But then when it comes to these upstate plants, old, decrepit, the owner, there've been two owners, but one has wanted to sell its plant. In any case, in relationship to these four nukes, Cuomo has said that we need the jobs. I mean, this goes in contradiction to the deal on Indian Point, where the state would train the workers at Indian Point 2 and 3 in green, renewable, safe energy. I mean, they could do the same thing to the few thousand workers upstate. And then furthermore, Cuomo has made some pretty problematic statements about how it's important to get electricity from nuclear power and how it's needed. I mean, upstate, you couldn't have offshore wind upstate, but you could have all kinds of solar and all types of other kinds of safe, green alternative power. So the situation with Cuomo is very complex. On one hand, he's been doing some good things, not perfect things, but good things. And on the other hand, he's been pushing for these upstate nukes to continue operation, these old, decrepit nukes. And as you've discussed, for electric ratepayers to have this surcharge on their bills for a dozen years to pay for these upstate nukes, $7.6 billion. So that's the situation. It's a situation which members of the state legislature, many of them, have been challenging in recent months. This upstate bailout, upstate nuke bailout plan is something that is being challenged by a large grouping of environmental organizations. But Cuomo, who's a stubborn guy, it still continues to push forward on it.
Well, if there was a vote taken in the legislature, or has there been a vote taken in the New York legislature, up or down on this plan?
I am not clear on that, Harvey, but I know that there's a, I believe, something passed the Assembly along these lines, the State Assembly. The State Senate is more difficult because even though it has now a Democratic majority, in fact, a solid Democratic majority, a group of Democrats, about seven or eight, have allied with Republicans. So the even though there's a Democratic majority, the Democrats don't rule in the State Senate. In fact, the majority leader of the Senate is a fellow named John Flanagan, who's a Republican from Long Island, from Huntington. But he should know the situation because here on Long Island, we were almost pushed into becoming what nuclear promoters said, described at the time as a nuclear park, 7 to 11 nuclear power plants, with Shoreham, which was completed as the first. And the people of Long Island and the public officials of Long Island got together and fought the nuclear establishment within government, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Department of Energy, and the nuclear industry. I mean, in fact, the Shoreham was the same kind of reactor. It was a GE Mark I reactor that underwent those meltdowns, those explosions at Fukushima. Here, Long Island has, where Flanagan comes from, has succeeded in stopping nuclear power on Long Island. Cuomo, with the support of state legislators, has made this deal to end nuclear power in Westchester County, just up north. People listening who are not from New York, just above. I mean, it's 35 miles from Times Square, basically. I mean, in fact, exactly, not even basically. But still, he wants us to hang on to these upstate nukes. Now, a big inadequacy in his thinking is, okay, he's concerned about the proximity of New York City to these two nuclear plants. But, I mean, you look at Chernobyl, you look at Fukushima, you look at Three Mile Island, and when there is a nuclear-powered plant disaster, the radioactivity doesn't stop at 10 miles, as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission would have us believe, in terms of an emergency evacuation zone. In fact, it doesn't stop at 50 miles, which is the bigger zone that the federal government acknowledges. Indeed, told Americans within 50 miles of Fukushima to evacuate. So, but in fact, we're talking hundreds of miles. And look at Chernobyl. How far that that radioactivity went into Scandinavia, into the United Kingdom, and so forth. And if there is a disaster at one of these upstate nuclear plants, and that easily can happen, they've all been problem plagued. The folks in the southern portion of New York State could be deeply affected. In fact, in the central portion of New York State, I mean, Albany is a big city. Syracuse is a big city. Rochester is a big city. Buffalo is a big city. It's all upstate in the central portion of New York in terms of where these nukes are. But the millions of people in total who live in those cities and around them could be impacted severely, lethally, by these upstate nuclear plants that Cuomo would allow to continue to operate.
So the point is, at this point now, Carl, you weren't on, but there has been an auction and the Quad Cities reactor complex, which is being bailed out in Illinois, couldn't even compete with the bailout. So yeah. I guess what we need is somebody needs to read the fine print of these deals that are being proposed and see if the money is even required to go to improving the operations of these reactors. I don't know, Kevin, do you know, has anybody read the fine print of the Ohio deal or the Illinois deal?
Well, the deals, like in Ohio, keep shifting, too. It's like a moving target, so you have to specify very clearly which version at what time. One thing I did want to jump back to real quick is, to the best of my knowledge, unless it's happened recently, the New York bailout was largely to entirely Cuomo's doing, including his public service commission. And yes, the state legislature blessed it in a sense by not doing anything to stop it legislatively or legally. And there were Democrats, I do believe, who had some tough questions for the public service commission chairman at one point. But that was a difference, to my understanding, between the New York and Illinois scandals, was that in Illinois, the state legislature did have a role, and they did explicitly approve this dumb thing, and then the governor not only signed it into law, state law, but then he even extended the time window out to 10 years. It wasn't going to be that long. So there are subtle differences between these things, but they're being used now, as I mentioned earlier, as models for other states, and it's a long list of other states with old reactors. One thing I wanted to point out, too, is that Exelon Nuclear, which is headquartered in Chicago but has a strong Philadelphia wing to its corporation, is the beneficiary of both the New York and the Illinois bailouts. As Carl mentioned, Entergy, which owns Indian Point, also owns Fitzpatrick, but is selling it to Exelon. So Exelon, 4 reactors in upstate New York, Exelon, 3 reactors in downstate Illinois. Their 7 reactors are the beneficiaries of this grand total of over $10 billion in repair subsidies.
And, of course, First Energy in Ohio is talking about selling Perry and Davis Bessey, I presume, to Exelon, along with Beaver Valley in Pennsylvania. And they own 3 Mile Island 1, is that correct?
So yeah, I Exelon think does, yes.
Yeah, so they're talking about selling those reactors to Exelon also, which would be in line for the $4.5 to $5.5 billion that would come from the bailout voted by Ohio. The Ohio bailout actually would carry over into the Pennsylvania reactors, which is one of the issues that has been raised by the opposition here. So we're talking with Kevin Camps from NERSC, Carl Grossman, one of the great heroes of the anti-nuclear movement on Long Island, longtime campaigner and a professor of journalism. So the question now is, on June 5th, Monday, June 5th, opponents of the New York bailout are going into court. And I presume there are some pretty powerful corporate interests that are in opposition to this bailout. I know in Ohio we've had a pretty substantial showing from the business community opposing this bailout. And it's been very interesting on that score. What kind of corporate opposition have you seen, Kevin, to these bailouts, both in court and politically?
Yeah, you're right. The competitors of the nuclear power industry, the coal-powered industry, for example, other sources of electricity, including renewables, are rightfully up in arms because it's an unfair competitive advantage that the nuclear power industry is getting. There's that. Then there's also just users of electricity, major manufacturers. Every business uses electricity, so every business is impacted. Granted, businesses, especially big ones, often get sweetheart deals for the electricity they use. They don't pay the same rates that households do. But you know, broad swaths of the business community are on the bad end of these bailouts. And so there has been resistance. There have been coalitions of corporate interests that have formed. They even ran funny ads around Ohio, I do believe it was, where they showed a diner and these two gentlemen were having coffee and the waitress said, that'll be $150 for that cup of coffee. And the guy's like, what? And she said, well, our coffee maker broke and we need a new one, so you got to pay up. And so they, you know, and then they ended it with stop these nuclear bailouts. So it's strange bedfellows, but sometimes it's still not enough. It's incredible. In Michigan, when Palisades got a sweetheart deal, the highest power purchase agreement that Tim Judson at Nuclear Information Resource Service, who studies this across the country, ever has seen, the major manufacturers of Michigan teamed up with the Republican Attorney General of the state of Michigan to try to stop this gouge by Entergy Nuclear at Palisades and lost before the Michigan Public Service Commission. So it just shows you, that was back in 2007, how powerful the nuclear lobby is.
God, that's insane. That's really amazing. There was one amazing moment
I sat in hearings in Ohio. I stopped going, but I wanted to go to this one. And one of the legislators, someone was there arguing for the jobs. You know, they always trot out these people from the local community and to preserve the jobs in northern Ohio at the nuclear plant. And one of the legislators said, I was astounded to hear this. He said, well, you know, the rates are going to go up, and that's going to cost jobs. So you're going to preserve the jobs at the nuke, but you're going to kill other jobs. I was astounded to hear that from an Ohio legislator. I mean, the Ohio legislature, despite the state being a majority Democratic state, the Ohio legislature has Republican supermajorities in both houses. And we have a Republican governor, although he's proven to be pretty quirky. And I think he's going to be against this bailout, actually. But is there any lever to push beyond this court proceeding, Carl, in New York to reverse this bailout at this point in time?
Well, I think it's going to take a combination of strategies. I mean, in fact, here on Long Island, that's what was done. It was protests, civil disobedience. One day, 600 people were arrested at the Shoreham nuclear plant, going over the fence, including my son, Kurt. It was very important, the civil disobedience, the political protests, the lobbying. It's so important to change the complexion of some of these governmental bodies, and here on Long Island, that's what was done. People who were pro-nukers were thrown off the Suffolk County legislature, and that was amazing. Suddenly, the Suffolk County legislature, which is the ruling government in Suffolk County, place with 1.5 million people, where all the nukes were to go, had a government body which was fiercely, aggressively anti-nuclear. And, I mean, there was other strategies as well. The winning strategy finally turned out to be the use of the state's power of eminent domain to stop this utility, the Long Island Lighting Company, from building 7 to 11 nuclear power plants. I mean, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had given the okay to this, have the Shoreham plant go through low power testing, and was going to give it an okay to operate, and gave an okay to two additional nuclear plants just to the east on the Long Island Sound in Jamesport. But what this, what some anti-nuke people did here on Long Island, and with political officials in the state legislature, was to enact the Long Island Power Act of 1985. Which provided that the Long Island Power Authority, which was established, could use the state's power of eminent domain, which is the kind of power that's used when a government wants to widen a road and some folks don't want to sell that right away. The state can move in, or governments can move in and use eminent domain. So here, as part of this Big Ten strategy, because here you have demonstrations led by the Shared Alliance, and you had political action led by the Shoreham Opponents Coalition and the People's Action Coalition, and then a group that was called Citizens to Replace LILCO, were to have eminent domain utilized, and the Long Island Lighting Company eliminated as a corporate entity, Long Island Power Authority having the power to seize the assets or stock of the Long Island Lighting Company, and that caused the Long Island Lighting Company to give up, even though it was led by a pro-nuke former assistant director of Brookhaven National Laboratory, set up in 1947 to develop nuclear technology, civilian uses, and do atomic research, William Catacasino. So I think in this situation with a $7.6 billion bailout, which has already taken effect. I mean, just a month or so ago, this surcharge was applied to utility bills of New Yorkers. There has to be a wide range of action. Also, in the fight against nukes on Long Island, there was a lot of litigation. There was a lot of lawsuits. So I think that all has to be done again to stop this bailout and to allow what, in fact, Entergy wanted to do, sell Fitzpatrick. I mean, it found it uneconomical and was ready to sell it, but with this deal, it was able to transfer it essentially to Exelon, the biggest nuclear utility in the country today. And again, we need citizen, we need Big Ten citizen action, all kind of strategies, in my judgment, to stop this this terrible plan, this terrible effort.
So, is there a sufficient, Kevin? Do you see? You're not in New York, but you spent a lot of time there. Do you see a sufficient groundswell to make this a really substantial opposition? I know I've talked with Susan Shapiro. And people in Westchester who are going to court on Monday, June 5th. And is there public backing for this? I mean, what's it going to take for the governor to pull out of this insane plan?
Yeah, full disclosure, Beyond Nuclear is a party to that lawsuit. And part of the legal strategy, the legal argument, is that those who chose to invest in renewable energy in New York through consumer choice programs are still being forced to kind of pay twice for electricity, because every ratepayer in New York is being forced to pay into the $7.6 billion, even if the consumers chose long ago to forego nuclear power, wanted nothing to do with it. So that's a part of the argument. Even folks who have, you know, solar panels like Carl does on his own roof. So there's,
well, you know,
there's that
Kevin,
legal...
Let me jump in. You know, that was also, that also happened in Nevada, where people put solar on their rooftop and had a deal with the state and or the utility. And then they came at them and tried to tax those solar panels. I think that the people with the solar panels won in Nevada.
Yeah, they have a strong legal case, but it's kind of like the attitude of the public service commissions and the nuclear industry is, so sue us, which puts the burden on those victimized unnecessarily. So it is, it's a sabotaging of the promise of renewables and efficiency, because they don't want the competition. It's a life or death struggle for not only the nuclear industry, but also the fossil fuel industry. And to answer your question about public opposition in New York, I've been thrilled to read you know, the updates from Stop Cuomo's Nuclear Tax, this coalition of groups led by Public Interest Research Group in New York, NYPIRG, and also Food and Water Watch, and a lot of other groups are bird-dogging Cuomo. They crashed his birthday party this year. They're following him all over the place. They're putting people in the streets. They're showing up at all the public hearings, whether it's Public Service Commission, state legislative hearings. People are on fire. And I was just going to mention, too, that, that Exelon is not only the largest nuclear power utility, as Carl mentioned. When it acquired D.C. area Mid-Atlantic utility Pepco, Potomac Electric Power Company, about a year ago, in a really, really stinky deal, illegal, actually, and Public Citizen and D.C. Sun are challenging it legally. It became the biggest electric utility in the country. And sure enough, despite assurances to the contrary, they started upping the rates immediately on D.C. ratepayers. So Exelon is a, you know, a ruthless company, willing to break the law, bend the law, break the law, and then it's kind of like burden on you to stop us.
And this is the former Commonwealth Edison, Chicago, right? I mean, Exelon swallowed them up, is that correct?
Well, Exelon is the merger of Commonwealth Edison of Chicago and Philadelphia Electric, the number one and number two largest nuclear power utilities in the U.S. It took place in 2000. And the investment banker who made it happen was Rahm Emanuel, who is now the mayor of Chicago. He made us a personal fortune of around $10 million on the merger.
And he was formerly chief of staff of the Obama White House. And Obama's big political advisor, David Axelrod, did public relations for Exelon. I mean, I've written when Obama first got in and did this flip on nuclear power, because before he got elected, he articulated opposition. In fact, he to a New Hampshire newspaper, and this is actually online, you can see Obama running first time for office saying problems with nuclear power plants is that they can blow up and kill a lot of people, and we have solar and wind to provide the energy we need. then in the White House, under pressure from Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod and others, and also Exelon is the big utility in his home base of Chicago. In fact, it was described, and I've written about this, as Obama's utility. You had a situation of Obama taking a big, big dive. You know,
yeah, it's awful.
It's more most important of all in fighting nuclear power, in my view, is doing it from the grassroots, doing it from the bottom up, and don't hope for some politician. I mean, maybe Andrew Cuomo could be educated and change his mind, but I think pressure has to be applied, just like what Kevin is talking about, the Stop Cuomo Tax Group. Out of NYPIRG and out of food and water and so forth, doing a great job, but more has to be done. And again, it's fairly new that people are getting their bills with this surcharge, including people of Long Island who, since the end of Shoreham and the end of the additional plants, Jamesport and others, that the Long Island Lighting Company wanted to build, and the end of the Long Island Lighting Company, and the two nukes at Brookhaven National Laboratory, also closed up at this point. Long Island is nuclear free. So what's going on here? We got to pay a surcharge to keep these.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. You're like, 300 miles from these nukes in upstate New York? You didn't get a drop of energy from them, and they're surcharging you to pay for this bailout of these four reactors? That's insane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
God. All right, we're talking with Carl Grossman here, longtime stalwart of the anti-nuclear movement, professor of journalism at Old Westbury in Long Island, and Kevin Camps, a younger stalwart of the anti-nuclear movement at Nuclear Information Resource.
He's a key figure in Beyond Nuclear. And in fact, if I can put in a plug for Beyond Nuclear, listeners should go to beyondnuclear.org. And in terms of full disclosure, I'm happily on the board of beyondnuclear.org. And, I mean, people listening should realize, like the guy said a century ago, organize, organize, organize. And that's what great organizations like Beyond Nuclear, Nuclear Information and Resource Service, used to be on its board, River Keeper, the group that you've long been involved with, Greenpeace, and so forth, and there's so many others, Friends of the Earth, and so on and so on. That's what you got to join together with. I mean, the lone voice is great. The letter of the editor that you could write is important. But I think in terms of social change, it's best that we be organized.
Absolutely.
You know,
so the point is also... Go ahead, Kevin.
Just one grassroots group I wanted to name, too, is Nuclear Energy Information Service in Chicago. We just awarded David Kraft, the director of close to 40 years service now, a award on Tuesday evening, a couple nights ago, the Judith Johnsrud Unsung Hero Award, which is a Beyond Nuclear Award. And we awarded it to Dave at the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability award ceremony on Capitol Hill. And he's, you know, the campaign against the bailouts is just one of many campaigns that NEIS wages against Exelon from the belly of the beast right there in Chicago. And I mentioned when I introduced Dave and gave him the award on behalf of Beyond Nuclear that he often, his humor shines through his activism. So they did Alms for Exelon, ALMS, Alms for Exelon, street theater complete with collection buckets. They were outside of shareholder meetings and other Exelon PR events. And as the nuclear lobbyists and executives passed by going to their soirees, Dave and company would ask them for $25,000 donations, throw it in the bucket because, you know, why wouldn't you? It's for your company. You're asking the ratepayers of Illinois to fork in, so why won't you? So just wonderful stuff Dave's been doing for four decades from the belly of the beast there in Chicago.
Yeah,
and,
really.
And as someone by the name of Harvey Wasserman has said, and I've quoted this many times, the myth that you can't fight City Hall is a myth created by City Hall. You can
Absolutely.
Fight City Hall. You can fight a governor. You can fight a president. You can fight the other, part of his nuclear establishment, part of the supporters of the nuclear establishment, and win.
And we have won. I mean, you got to look back in 1974, Donald Trump's predecessor, Richard Nixon, said there'd be 1,000 nukes in the U.S. by the year 2000. In the year 2000, there were 104. Now we're at 99. And these bailouts are really the make or break of the remaining reactors in this country. We've had a trickle of shutdowns, but if we can stop these bailouts from happening, all these reactors are going to start to really flow downstream. We do want to mention, you mentioned Obama, Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, this trio of nuke supporters. You have to say that Barack Obama is the man most responsible for the Westinghouse bankruptcy. I mean, Westinghouse going bankrupt is a huge deal. The Westinghouse Corporation got the contract, the very first contract, for large-scale electricity distribution when Niagara Falls went online back in the, I guess it was the 1880s or 90s. And they battled Edison for the contract. Westinghouse was along with Nikola Tesla, and he had AC power as opposed to Edison that had DC, and Westinghouse and Tesla won the bid, all the power went to Buffalo. And now Westinghouse, because Obama gave the $8.3 billion loan guarantees to build the Vogtle plant in Georgia, and the other two reactors in South Carolina went ahead, and they're both now on what they've done is they've bankrupted Westinghouse after 120 years. And it wouldn't have happened if Obama had not given Vogtle those loan guarantees. And so now we're not only are we on the brink of fighting these bailouts, but we're also fighting, and we're really at the edge of the cliff here to see if these four reactors, under the last reactors in the United States under construction in the Southeast, are going to collapse. Do we have any new news on those? Kevin, have you heard anything lately about Vogtle and VC Summer?
Yeah, because Alliance for Nuclear Accountability's DC Days just took place this week here, I did get some updates from folks like Glenn Carroll with Nuke Watch South and Tom Clements from Savannah Riverside Watch. Between them, they're covering the scene in Georgia and South Carolina. And, it's almost day by day at this point. I believe the latest is that Southern Nuclear, in charge of the Vogtle 3 and 4 construction project, is going to take over completely from Westinghouse Nuclear and try to keep it going on their own. I just saw an email fly through in the last hour, I believe, that said an $800 million loan has been secured somehow. I didn't read the article, by Westinghouse Nuclear to try to make it through this bankruptcy phase. Toshiba of Japan, another century-old corporation, is wobbly itself because of this $10 billion bad debt associated with these four reactors of the Toshiba Westinghouse design. So this is global, at least Western, economic crisis here going on. And that $8.3 billion federal taxpayer-backed loan guarantee associated with Vogtle 3 and 4, if this loan defaults, and it could well, it's 15 times more money than was lost at the Solyndra Solar loan guarantee that the Republicans made so much hay about several years back.
And just to provide for listeners the international dimension component of this thing, for years, GE and Westinghouse were the Coke and Pepsi-Cola of nuclear power. Historically, 80% of nuclear power plants worldwide were of Westinghouse and GE design, and both those companies got their start in doing nuclear in the Manhattan Project as contractors to the crash program to build atomic bombs, and then after the war thought of other things that could be done with nuclear to perpetuate this special interest they had. Well, a few years ago, this company called Toshiba acquired Westinghouse's nuclear operations, and at the same year, in fact, Hitachi, another Japanese corporation, went 50-50 with GE and its nuclear operation. So now, essentially, the Coke and Pepsi of nuclear power are Japanese brands. That's a large reason why Abe, the leader of Japan, has been pushing nuclear power to a fairly well, despite what happened to his country at Fukushima. And then back to beyond nuclear, I think I'm so proud of a member of our board, Kendra Ulrich, who is, she's been in Japan now for a good deal of long time, fighting the nuclear revival, which Abe would have happened in Japan. And Kendra works for Greenpeace. And so, you know, again, I urge people listening to write, to email, to connect, to telephone groups that are in the front lines of fighting atomic energy, Greenpeace, Beyond Nuclear, and so forth. Join
Kevin,
with them, contribute to them, and all together we can end this, this, I believe, firmly end this nightmare. And here we have safe, clean, green alternative, alternatives of solar and wind and so forth, ready on the shelf, being, I mean, it's happening all over the country, all over the world, to easily replace nuclear power and fossil fuel energy.
Kevin, it's beyondnuclear.org, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Beyondnuclear.org.
Okay, so let's finish on a big plus here. I've been reading about this these two mega gigafactories, we're calling them now, from Tesla. The one is the giant, and which actually I think is the biggest building in the world now, the gigafactory in Nevada that Tesla is using to build this new generation of batteries. And now in Buffalo, we have the Buffalo Billion Factory, $1 billion to build this plant. It's going to create 5,000 jobs at least for solar panels. Now, has anybody suggested to Andrew Cuomo that $7 billion, $7.6 billion would build 7 gigafactories in New York and create at least 35,000 jobs? As opposed to that, how many jobs are they talking about at the 4 reactors upstate? About 1,500, right? Total? 2,000, maybe?
Yeah, about that. Sometimes I hear 3,000, but about that. It's not huge.
So we can say 2 to 3,000 for $7.6 billion at 4 dying nukes, or it was 7 gigafactories, 35 to 40,000 jobs. Has anybody pointed this small fact out? I mean, the Buffalo Billion Factory is about to go online, I think. I think they're going to start banging out panels there this year, and I think batteries have already started to come out of Sparks, Nevada, at the battery factory there. You guys know anything about those two plants?
Well, Tim Judson at NEARS and Dave Kraft at NEIS had the presence of mind to just divide the mega bailouts for nuclear, old nukes, by the number of jobs, and guess what? These are jobs that are being subsidized to the tune of millions of dollars each. So you're right, Harvey, to point to that. Just how many jobs could be created with these nuclear bailouts in other sectors like efficiency, the lowest hanging fruit of all, the biggest bang for your buck in terms of climate protection that we have is energy efficiency. It's very labor intensive. Regarding Nevada, I just wanted to mention I was just out there for a Native Community Action Council meeting on Earth Day and the day of the Scientist March, and Ian Zabardi of the Western Shoshone Indian Nation took us on a tour afterwards out to Moapa Paiute Reservation just outside Vegas to show us a large-scale solar PV installation that he had a big hand in helping make happen. And he kind of downplayed what we were about to see. It was 2 to 3 million solar panels in a desert valley just outside of Vegas. It was huge. It was miles across, it seemed anyway. And at the same time, elsewhere in Nevada, you've got one of the biggest solar thermal concentration electricity generation plants in the world that's been announced last October, and it's under construction already. So away we go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's astounding. We're really right on the cutting edge here. And these three bailouts in Ohio, New York, and Illinois are what's going to determine how many of these insane reactors stay open in the United States. And like I say, I think we're going to win in Ohio. If we can reverse this thing in New York and maybe even in Illinois, I think this loss of Exelon at the Quad Cities auction there is a big deal also. These are the three moments now that we have. Some other states are asking for bailouts, Connecticut and so on. But the one in Ohio is further along. I think we have a great chance to win there, Kevin. You need to think about coming out to the next hearing. I just talked to the Green Party candidate for governor, and I'm going to try and get her to jump in on this. But I was amazed at this one hearing by how lukewarm they were. Guys, thank you so much. Thank you, crew in New York. We'll be back next week in Solartopia.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.